Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Russ, I'm doing good. You?
Pretty good. Mike, how are you?
Good evening, all.
Well, we're watching a game that, I don't know, seems like it could go into overtime. It just seems like all these games could go into overtime. Every game.
Anymore, that's for sure. I mean, do you take a, if you're watching the NBA playoffs, if you want at least a smidgen of drama, you might actually get it watching this, but, you know, that's just me talking.
Well, it's drama if you're not, a fan of the team that is losing the lead.
This is true.
Well, I'm neutral in this instance because I
I don't like
either one of them. Although my vehement hatred of one is completely understandable based on the team that I cover and root for. I was commenting before we just started recording. This is the playoff of the blown lead. It's like nothing is. Nothing is sacrosanct. Nothing is for sure. It's like Anaheim is down 3-0 with 4.5 minutes left to go against Edmonton, and that lead is not safe. So, I mean, to somebody who I considers themselves, maybe a hockey purist or somebody who just loves the history of the game, it really irks me because, I mean, honestly, you got a lead in the third period in the playoffs. You should hold on to it. And these teams
That goal just now, though, just hit like three different people. Again, it is one of those things now with we're starting to get less clean goals late in games, and that's a part of it, too. That's a function of, it's hard to blame the goalies when, it hits one of your guys, then it hits another one of your guys, and, so that's – we're getting a lot of that now, too, with all the traffic in front of the net.
Well, it's like playing floor hockey and – putting the shot off a pylon, which, by the way, that happened tonight because it went off Dion Phaneuf.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, see, you're going back to floor hockey days now. We're getting to scary territory just early into the show.
You never saw me play floor hockey, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm imagining, and that's bad. And if everybody else is imagining, we probably lost the audience. So,
okay.
I know you were a superstar. Go ahead, Mike. Tell us.
No. I was the Barry Beck of the floor hockey league. I was a defenseman who liked to block a lot of shots.
Just for the Barry Beck fans out there, he did have a couple 100-point seasons until his shoulder kept popping out every other game. Did you have that problem too?
No, I did not.
Okay. All right.
I was often referred to as the Dominic Hasek of the floor hockey league, but, that's because I had no clue how to play goal.
I just hope Ted Nolan wasn't your coach, Anthony.
Mind you, this was during his days when he was first with the Buffalo Sabres.
Going,
what the heck is that?
Yeah, he was a real freak at that point.
Now he's a hockey Hall of Famer, and I could just sit back with my fingers behind my head and just go, That's right, man before his time.
He was a man. He was a man before his time. There's no question about that. So we move past this series, and we'll see if Ottawa can come back. Lots going on now with Nashville off the ice. And Ryan Johansson had some emergency thigh surgery. And so the whole world wants to know. And, the minute it gets reported, I start getting texts. Did Kessler do it? Did Kessler do it? Like, we don't know.
They showed the video where there was contact. I think it was – who was it from the Ducks? Not Montour. I forget who it was. It was one of their
– Emilio Estevez?
No, it was one of their – it's one of their fourth-line forever. You could see the contact with his leg, and he was coming off the ice very slowly on that particular leg.
Okay.
And he basically sucked it up for another period and a half after that hit. But it really was innocuous. I mean, the hit along the boards, legs look like they kind of got together, and nothing overtly. If that was the hit that hurt him, which I think, based on what I'm seeing, I think that was it. it really wasn't like any, you know, it wasn't any sort of dirty subterfuge on the part of Ryan Kessler or anybody else. I think it was just a play that where they got engaged on the board and stuff
Did it cause a blood clot, or was it a situation where
it was serious enough where I had to think.
Yeah.
You know, they've required emergency surgery and
sounds like a blood clot.
Roger has been lucky. And here's the thing with Johansson, he's been pretty fortunate in the injury department since he got traded to Nashville. If I recall, he had his injury problems in the past with Columbus. So this is sort of rearing its head again where, you know, kind of something that's innocuous is knocking the guy out for what will be months. And it's kind of crazy when you think about it.
It is.
Yeah,
go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
I looked up the video and it was Josh Manson, but it was not like it was not during a hit. It was basically they were going toward the boards.
Right.
Manson's right leg hit Johansson's left leg, and it almost like the knee hit the upper part of the thigh. But it could be a torn muscle or it could be a blood clot, as you say. But this is devastating because, I mean, Russ, you and I did a show with Eklund and Paul McCann, who's the PA announcer from the Preds. And, I mean, the Predators and their fans have had every reason to be confident, you know, the way their team had played at home. They won one game in Anaheim. But if they lose Johansson and Fisher, good night, Nurse. It's over.
It's going to be extremely difficult at that point for them. 34.3 left right now. Sens have got to the bench, and the Penguins just got nailed for too many men on the ice. So
it's
we're going
crazy.
To be 6-on-4. This is
bad. I'll say that.
I mean, they have 34 seconds to survive this, basically, or we're going OT, or there's going to be some interesting conversations here.
Yeah, we'll get back to the other series in a minute, but there have been some flaws with Mike Sullivan's coaching in this series. First flaw, and you would know this as well as me, when we saw that he was going to use Mark Streit, I was thinking, oh, he's going to use him just on the power play, and, you know, he'll be a seventh defenseman. No, he used him five on five, and he was on
–
which was crazy.
Yeah.
Why would he do that?
Yeah, I was hoping to potentially get a different look there. It was seeing him play – In that circumstance, Mark's a good player. You know, a few years back, but he's slow now. He's slow afoot, exactly. And you get the right matchup like the Sens did there, and you could really just do damage. You can really tee off on him at that point. So, I mean, if it's an emergency, it's one thing. But if you got, you know, and they have had injuries, but still, there were other options in terms of playing, not having to play in that many minutes.
Yeah.
So.
And now this, you know, too many men on the ice, it's like, listen, you guys won a Stanley Cup. You have a chance to lock down this game, and you've now given the home team new life.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And Pittsburgh has been playing with five defensemen since I think because Ruedel has been out. He's only played like 6 minutes. So they've been playing with five, and if they survive this, you know, next 20 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, right now the problem with is they just can't stay healthy. It's impossible for them to stay healthy. And now, especially on their defense, and if Ruedel is out, they survived. Now, if Ruedel is out, I've seen him play. He played with the Sabres, and he's an adequate defenseman. But now you're talking Derek Pouliot. Now you're talking Streit as a sixth defenseman, meaning he has to play. Or you're talking Frank Corrado or something like that. I mean, we're getting to the point where Pittsburgh. I mean, last year you thought they had a no-nothing or no-name defense, but and that defense had Letang.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
Getting straight.
Yep. Officially, sent Pens win, hold on for a 3-2 win, so the series is now not a 2-2 heading back to Pittsburgh.
They gutted out a win here, which is huge for them. I mean, this was the one where they had to. Are people going to point to Murray and say he was the difference? Maybe, but he was good, but was he fantastic? I don't know. I mean, he was good at the beginning when they peppered him with shots, but was he the difference maker? I don't know.
It was an interesting, curious move to go to him, but they really must have, you know, they must have figured that midnight had rung on Cinderella and
yeah.
Marc-Andre Fleury. They must have seen some things where they were just like, you know, we know who our starter is over the long term. We're used to seeing this happen, this flip-flop happen, and there's an injury of
yeah.
some kind.
Yeah.
But in terms of making a switch, I guess also sometimes you do that, you pull that trigger to kind of snap your team to make sure they play tighter D. And again, in Pittsburgh, granted, penalties were, you know, took some ill-advised penalties in this one, but at the same time, I
yeah.
think defensively they certainly tightened things down in front of Murray tonight, and that's, you know, that's to their credit. By the way, interesting stat real quick rolled up by Elliot Friedman.
Yeah.
This is the 47th one-goal game in these playoffs. The record is 51 from 2007. So we can still potentially have, if we can get four more games with only one with a one-goal difference, that will tie the record.
Wow. And 26 overtimes, too short of the record. 1993 was the season that you had the most overtimes. I think it was 28. So, I mean,
yeah.
It's getting, you know, it's a pretty exciting playoff, but I mean, I'm just a little, if you're a Pittsburgh fan, you have to be a little concerned again about their defense and in regard to the goaltending. I mean, I heard the thought, you know, when the announcement was made that, I'm sure Jim Rutherford is happy about this because, you know, Fleury is upped his trade value. I mean, nobody is thinking about trade value.
No.
Matt Murray was the starter. If he hadn't have had the injury that he had at the beginning of the first game in practice against Columbus before game one, he would have been in all this time. You know, you never know. Maybe he wouldn't have beaten Washington. But all I can say is that, you know, Fleury did a good job, but, you know, they had to go to Murray at this point, and he proved Mike Sullivan right.
He did. I mean, So a funny thing, before we get back to the Anaheim series, Ant's going to hate me for this. He's absolutely going to hate me. But because NBCN does cover soccer, they're now showing a soccer commercial with, like, whatever their Fugazi trophy is, and it looks like the hat that the Joker's henchmen wear. It's
You're
got, like...
The Premier League? You're talking
yeah.
about the Premier League?
Yeah. Don't show that trophy and then show the Stanley Cup trophy after. Please don't do that.
Oh, don't start getting all please like my sport on this, Russ. Okay?
Okay, are you big on that trophy? What's the name of it?
Listen, compared to the Stanley Cup, obviously not. The Cup is the Cup. But at the same time, in terms of in England, it's the Premier League title is what it is. I mean, but I think actually in many ways, I think in England they like the FA Cup is the one with all the history, the Football Association, where all the different leagues sort of play in the same tournament. But that one has got a bit more history than what used to be the Barclays Premier League. So.
Yeah, but this is like a European champ compared to the American champ in heavyweight. So you like the Frank Bruno in the situation?
I don't even know if I'm even going there. It's like apples and oranges today. That's like apples and oranges. This is two different sports, and but I think the trophies befit the games that they're played in. I think, you know,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, hockey is the tougher grind to win.
Was that commercial in between the Preakness commercial and the 5,000th Geico commercial that we've seen?
Yes.
Oh really? I thought it was the Curves Connection commercial or whatever the heck that was earlier.
Or that blatantly
that was
racist.
That was just all. I'm watching this thing going, wow, NBC. Holy crap.
Or that blatantly offensive Subway commercial for the Italian Hero sub.
That's the one.
Everybody hanging out on the step there saying you did good, Frankie. I'm like,
yeah, you did good, Frankie. Yeah, okay.
I'm like, yeah, thanks, Frankie. Yeah, I'm gonna tell you what I'm gonna say.
Yeah, I do want to hear what you guys want to say, because even in I have even commented on that coming from my Long Island roots, where we basically were a Jewish and Italian neighborhood. We had a deli around the corner. like, this would be sacrilege, this commercial. Like, this was like, basically, this looked like I thought this was a Saturday Night Live sort of spoof commercial.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, it's for Subway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But again, consider the source, it's Subway.
The fine Italian meats.
Yes, I would like to see them do that with different ethnic groups and see them get away with it.
Yeah, if they had the Reuben, all of a sudden they did the Reuben. Oh boy,
I could just see. Yeah, exactly. You get like, you know, I'm never gonna. Yeah, we're not even gonna go there. But
let's
I already
not
know,
go down that
know.
Road because.
I could see that being contentious. Okay. Anyhow, we get back to the other series, and I felt like Anaheim did a really good job with Nick Ritchie, and we're watching like it's fun to watch the emerging power forward because it's hard. It's hard to see that guy get to where they need to get to. They usually take longer. Ritchie's only 21, I think, and so we're seeing it a little early for him. A lot of times it'll even take till 22 or so for one of those guys that you've drafted and you say, wow, look at this guy. He could put it all together. And last night's game, Ritchie put it all together. And he's been doing it. He's been doing it now since the, you know, second half of the season and in the playoffs. And I think his coach did a nice job sort of sliding him over the boards. And, boy, when you see him coming down the wing, if you give him any kind of room like they did, it's over.
And so one thing, again, with Nashville that you do kind of worry, that it was always a concern of mine going into this series was, again, their blue line is, I think, potentially susceptible to some of these really big lumbering, quick lumbering and quick duck forwards.
Yeah.
And the fact that, again, this goes back to what Mike had, we talked about before the show, where you really got to tip your hat to Matt to Randy Carlyle. He's letting his young horses run, which is something that he would have been hesitant to do earlier in his career. He recognizes he's got, you know, an advantage here, I think, something that he has over Nashville, and is going to, I think, you know, and is going to press his advantage. And again, giving trust to Nick Ritchie like he has is a feather, you got to tip your hat to him.
You do, Mike.
Yeah, I look at those two teams, and this was even before the series started, and I saw the vulnerability. Now, Nashville's top four, their blue line is great. So is Anaheim's. But I think the difference between the two is you go to the third pairing, and you have guys like Montour and Theodore and, you know, and with – with Nashville, it's Yannick Weber and Matt Irwin. Now, that's not bad, but I mean, I think Anaheim's defense is so much better overall than Nashville's. And in a long series with those big forwards leaning on Yossi, hitting Ryan Ellis, I mean, the one play that I keep going back to is Cogliano knocks Ryan Ellis flying into the boards. Either he undercut his skates or hit him in like the first 5 minutes of the first period of game one. And I'm like, this is the trend that's going to be set by Anaheim. They're going to try to rock that defense. And now, without Johansson, maybe without Fisher, I think they're going to concentrate even more on Nashville's defense because they're not going to be fearful of a counterattack going the other way.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I'm going to be counting the amount of faceoffs that Nashville loses. Like that's going to be – they've already been getting beat in the dot anyhow, and now I kind of think – it's going to get worse than that. But we'll see. I mean, you know, hockey, I always say this, hockey is a weird game, man. And just when you think you can figure things out, something else will happen. So both series probably go to seven. I figured the Anaheim series would. I didn't think the Ottawa series would, and maybe it still won't. But, you know, it seems like it could. And so nobody's going to be shocked if they both go to seven. Nobody.
No. Not think anybody would at this point of the season. They've gotten to this point. And again, we discussed this in the last show, Russ.
Yeah.
How I felt that the Sens were going to be a tough out, and they're going to remain a tough out for Pittsburgh. And now I don't think any of us expected them to fall into a hole. And granted, it's not a huge hole, but still, the way they got ran over in Game 3 was certainly an eye opener. But it's one of those things where it's 2-1 in a series.
Yeah.
So Pittsburgh still have time to certainly recover, and to their credit they have. And I still think things will probably shake out in Pittsburgh's favor, but again, we'll see going into game five.
Let's talk a little Vegas now, because I was a little shocked this week to hear about their shared affiliation. We've always heard that it's bad for goalies. We've seen it in action where teams sometimes get annoyed with the other team and because guys aren't getting the developmental play with the Wolves because they want to win. And getting past that a little bit, and the one thing I was really surprised at is I thought that basically Vegas, with all this time, would try and field their own team somewhere else because they could sign all these free agents. And I kind of wonder, was the task too much, or was it they decided not to spend the money?
I think – I don't know if it's that. I don't – again, the question is, did Vegas have enough to stock an AHL team? I think you have to be realistic about that, at least in year one. And again, they still are the primer. Oh, this situation is going to be for 1 year. It's going to be that way for a year. And
right.
Then St. Louis, with it, by St. Louis, it really is about buying, St. Louis enough time for them to be able to, find another affiliate for the following year. So really, they have that. It's just, I don't think there's going to be enough guys that they're going to have, or at least eligible players, that they would be able to field a full squad for the Wolves. So I don't see it as much of an issue. If it's more than a year, then to me, my eyebrows go up a little bit.
Okay.
But at least for the first year, the way the AHL is set up and the way the Vegas is just, I don't think I have enough players system-wise with some, I feel like it'll be an okay arrangement in year one. And then they'll have the full team ready to roll in year two when St. Louis is able to find a different affiliate.
Mike?
I mean, we're talking about, obviously the expansion draft is 30 players. When you're talking about stocking an NHL and an AHL franchise, you're talking about up to 50 contracts, and that's not even including AHL contracts. So you're talking about George McPhee going out and having to sign 10 to 15 free agents.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting, their draft picks that they make this year will all be 18 years old. So I could see them even extending this another year because they're not going to be able to get their own draft picks into their
own. There's a limit.
And there's
you have to account for the AHL veteran limit.
Right.
Again, you can't just willy-nilly, just tell every other AHL team, you're stuck with a veteran limit and then allow Vegas to run roughshod in Chicago and put as many AHL veterans as they want or young players. It's not going to work. But, yeah, I think Mike's right. I think it could be more than a year, although I think St. Louis is going to be St. Louis will – be looking. It won't be good for their team, their development.
Yeah.
Players spread out all over the AHL. It's not going to be good for their development. So St. Louis will pull out. Maybe you're right. Maybe there's another partner that would come in the following season if Vegas still doesn't have quite enough of the players that they need to be able to stock the roster. Maybe it's another team. But I would think St. Louis though is only looking to have that arrangement for 1 year and no more than a year. So. That's my view on it.
They could have had it. It could have been fun though. There could have been like open tryouts. Frank the Animal by Lois could have gone to the tryouts and given it another go. We could have had some fun with it.
But it's not like that. AHL's not like that anymore.
I know.
It's not going to be It's not going to be a case where they're going to be filling in the rosters with Ross Ray.
Yeah.
Tom Sestito would have a landing spot then.
He would have a landing spot.
Oh, goodness gracious, yeah.
No, but all right, so it's an interesting thing, though. It definitely caught my attention this week. The expansion draft is still one of these fluid things that we keep talking about, and we haven't really seen much in the way of activity yet for teams saving guys and just so they don't lose them to Vegas, but I guess that'll happen after the Stanley Cup, Ant. I guess.
Yeah,
that's
I think a lot of these things, these deals will start shaking out after the finals are over. They're all just kind of, I think, in a holding pattern. I think there's certainly paths that McPhee's gonna explore and take, but we're just not gonna know until once the cup's raised.
Well, I saw something interesting covering that Toronto-Syracuse Calder Cup second round series. Kurstis Godlevskis is, probably the number two in Tampa next year behind Vasilevsky, although I've read some reports that they're interested in bringing Peter Budaj back, but maybe that's sort of as a disaster option.
I don't know if it is, though, Mike. They really – the word I heard from a couple people in Tampa was they really liked Budaj. They liked his influence on Vasilevsky. As a foil, so it wouldn't surprise me that if they could offer. I don't think they would go more than a year with Budaj. If he gets a better offer in Europe, then maybe he'll end up taking it. But
the interesting thing was, Anthony, was that Godlevskis hasn't started one game for Syracuse. They've gone with a 34-year-old Mike McKenna in goal. And I was told by somebody that they're not playing Godlevskis because they're basically trying to hide him. I mean, they didn't let him go to the World Championships and play for Latvia, and they're not letting him play for Syracuse. He's the backup to a 34-year-old guy who's basically just an AHL, filler.
They don't want an updated scouting report. They don't want to let Vegas have an updated scouting report on him, basically.
Yeah, And that's, I think that, obviously teams are going to try to hide players, but that's going a little further than I would have expected.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So with just a few minutes to go here, I thought it would be a good time to, now, you guys don't know that I'm going to bring this up. You have no idea because we never talk about a script on the show and we just sort of let it go. But I've always had a fascination with how cities treat pretzels when you're at a sporting event or before you get to the sporting event. And so, like, you have the Philly pretzel, which is really good, right? It comes, mainly cold and strips of, like, thousands. And the only thing I worry about with the Philly pretzel and the Philly pretzel guy when he's standing alongside the highway or outside of the sporting arena is, dude, what did you do when you went to the bathroom? That's the only thing I think of. It's the first thing I think of. But then you go to New York and you have the street vendors with the hot, soggy pretzel, which I don't know how it gets hot and soggy, but it does. And that's the New York way, or at least the Manhattan way. Mike, is there a Buffalo pretzel? Is there, even though they're still in the same state, I'm going to give you an opportunity to shine a good light on Buffalo if that's possible.
Well, what I've noticed about the Buffalo pretzel is, it's just a regular soft pretzel, but I've never seen one in any other city caked with as much rock salt. And it's like the salt that they don't use on the roads in the winter that they use on the pretzel.
Jeez. The excess.
It's encased.
Goodness.
I think it's sponsored by the local hospital so they can, pump out the high blood pressure medication or something of that.
Oh, man.
It's ridiculous.
Ant, your thoughts?
My thought is, again, with the Philly pretzel, it varies depending on how they – my whole thing is I like mine lightly salted.
Mm-hmm.
So I can be a bit picky with regards to a pretzel that they're about to pick out, and they sometimes get a little mad at me, but I'm like, unless you give me a free cup of water with that pretzel, you better give me one that's going to be a little less than that. So I'm a pain in the butt when it comes to that. When I do on occasion partake in a Philly pretzel. Me growing up in South Philadelphia, the pretzel place that we always went to as a family was Federal Pretzel on 9th and Federal Street, and theirs was amazing because they were kind of like they were flat. Particularly thick and doughy, but in a really good way, where you can cut them in half with a bread knife and make sandwiches out of them. So you'd make a pretzel sandwich with lunch meat and cheese in between, and it was fun. And I would warm it. I just warm it up real quick in the microwave, and it would just come out not too long, but it comes out just warmed up just right. That was one of my highlights of growing up, working in my dad's store as a kid.
Yeah, that's kind of nice. Now you've skillfully avoided and skated around the cleanliness issue of if you get something from the pretzel guy on the side of the road or blocks away from the arena, what's your feeling about that guy? Can you trust him?
I don't buy. I'm not going to buy a pretzel from there. That's just me. I agree, there's a cleanliness issue there. I'm a little skeevots with that.
I do kind of worry about the skeevots part, I get, because I do kind of worry about the traffic also. Like, you know, these guys, a lot of times they're in like heavy traffic areas where
you gotta worry about other
emission.
Environmental issues. Environmental issues,
please. Well, I mean, first of all, I don't eat street meat, and I try to avoid any kind of, that kind of, in Buffalo. There's not many of them there, sometimes at the Sabres games, but that's about it. But when Buffalo is big on dipping, on extra, if you get nachos, extra, peppers or whatever. When it comes to pretzels, it's like, you know, they automatically offer you mustard, and I'm like, I can't stand that crap. I'll take cheese, thank you. I'll take ranch dressing.
Hold your roll. I always put mustard on a pretzel. Now, never the yellow crap. I always have to put the brown mustard. That yellow, I don't even know why people created yellow mustard. I just think it should be obliterated from the face of the earth, because I don't see the part in society where yellow mustard fits in. But Mike, what's wrong with a little mustard on a pretzel? What's wrong with you?
I despise mustard and anything on a hot dog. I mean, no ketchup, no mustard, no relish, no thanks.
Yeah, you're anti-condiment. It doesn't make sense. Something happened to young Mike Augello where maybe instead of ingesting some sort of baby food, you ingested like relish and ketchup instead for a meal and spit it up. Something happened.
The condiments I like are weird. I like mayonnaise and vinegar and blue cheese dressing and ranch, but not ketchup, not mustard, not relish. No thanks.
And are you a yellow mustard guy?
Not really. I prefer spicy brown mustard whenever I have it, and it's usually very judicious with the amount that I put. I don't slather. I put like a little thin strip of it on a hot dog bun. And it's always on the. I always put it. I won't put it on the dog directly. I put it on the bun and then sort of let it absorb into the bread, and then just sort of eat it that way. I like the hint of mustard. I don't like it. Completely overriding what I'm eating.
Yeah, I can't. I just can't see how people grew up. Like, if you grew up in Iowa and the only mustard you had was the yellow mustard, I guess you didn't know any better.
That's what you had. That's what you had. Exactly. If you grow up and that's what's available. It's like, you know, for me growing up in a grocery store, I didn't know about mixed greens for a salad. We had iceberg lettuce or romaine lettuce, and that was our salad for dinner. And discovering mixed greens for me was like, whoa, this is amazing compared to what I grew up with.
Anthony, what a concept to discover there were other dressings other than oil and vinegar.
Oh goodness, yeah. My mom was pretty good with in terms of like my dad was a big loved his ranch dressing. So
well, you know, I've just become a ranch guy.
The flavor ranch was solid.
I've just become a ranch guy.
Thousand Island was a big one for me.
But I do have to make fun of this because Mike hit on something, and then I promise we'll end the food talk and we'll probably just end the show. But Mike did hit on something. For some reason, my mother, my grandmother always had that oil and vinegar mixture ready.
Yep.
And, you know, even Good Seasons tried to sell you on that. And if you shook it together, eventually it's separated, right? And I just – When did people think that was a good idea for salad dressing? I don't understand.
I think that's what people had available. I think it goes down to what people had available growing up in terms of, you know, especially with families. If you have immigrant families, you're just coming into the country years ago, so you're limited on the amount of things. And then it just
my
becomes
family
kind of
was, there was no immigrants in my family. Like my great-grandmother, yeah, but by the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I'm third, fourth generation. So, I mean, I it's just certain things kind of stay around. Family develops a taste for certain things.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it just kind of sticks as part of tradition going forward. Like, for you know, goofy example, the other day we're over at my parents' house. My dad broke out an old recipe for zucchini bread that my grandmother used to make. It wasn't the fact that it was amazing. It was just the fact that I bit into it and I turned into like a 12. I was 10 years old.
Yeah,
it's just
the
memory of it more than anything. So it's just traditions and comfort and things that I think people really kind of enjoy or at least, you know, feel comfortable in. And it just gets passed down from generation to generation.
Yeah, oil and vinegar is a bad tradition, Mike. It's a bad
Yeah, but well, even worse, and thankfully my family didn't do this, but you know, the makeshift Italian dressing, which was oil, vinegar, and then that package of good season.
Oh, that was in my family. That was most certainly a part of it. It was oil, vinegar, and the good seasoning that they would put in. Shake it up and serve.
That's the whole thing. Like, nobody ever looked at the ingredients of that. When you shook it up, it was frightening. Like, there were just 45, 50 ingredients in there, it seemed.
Right. It was, you know, mostly oregano. It's just saying, you know, go out and get some oregano and put it in. Instead of this package, like half of the stuff that you don't know is probably like dead bugs or something.
But that's my point. It's like if it was laying on the shelf somewhere for like, you know, an extra 6 months or a year, and then you shook it up and put it in your drink. You don't know. You can't even tell. Like, you couldn't look at Good Seasons and say, oh, look, there's something wrong with it. You, there's no way to know.
That stuff had a half-life of a century.
Yeah. Yeah, that would explain a lot of why we are the way we are. But we blame our parents. That's okay.
Of course.
Anyhow, that'll be it for Off the Post this week. We certainly have some great hockey coming up. The Memorial Cup is moving on. And, you know, we'll talk about more of that next week and more of things that frighten us.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Buenas noches.